uttering a thousand passionate lamentations. When Don Quixote saw him, he exclaimed, "What news, Sancho, my friend? Am I to mark this day with a white stone or a black?" "Your worship," replied Sancho, "had better mark it with red ochre, like the inscriptions on the walls of classrooms, that those who see it may see it plain."
"Then thou bringest good news?" said Don Quixote.
"So good," replied Sancho, "that your worship has only to spur Rocinante and get out into the open field to see the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, who, with two others, damsels of hers, is coming to see your worship."
"Holy God! What art thou saying, Sancho, my friend?" exclaimed Don Quixote.
"Take care thou art not deceiving me, or seeking by false joy to cheer my real sadness."
"What could I get by deceiving your worship?" replied Sancho,
"especially when it will so soon be shown whether I tell the truth or not. Come, senor, push on, and you will see the princess our mistress coming, robed and adorned, in fact, like what she is. Her damsels and she are all one glow of gold, all bunches of pearls, all diamonds, all rubies, all cloth of brocade of more than 10 borders, with their hair loose on their shoulders like so many sunbeams playing with the wind. And moreover, they come mounted on 3 piebald cackneys, the finest sight ever you saw."
"Hackneys, you mean, Sancho," said Don Quixote.
"There's not much difference between cackneys and hackneys," said Sancho. "But no matter what they come on, there they are, the finest ladies one could wish for, especially my lady the Princess Dulcinea, who staggers one's senses."
"Let us go, Sancho, my son," said Don Quixote, "and in guerdon of this news, as unexpected as it is good, I bestow upon thee the best spoil I shall win in the first adventure I may have. Or, if that does not satisfy thee, I promise thee the foals I shall have this year from my 3 mares that thou knowest are in foal on our village common."
"I'll take the foals," said Sancho, "for it is not quite certain that the spoils of the first adventure will be good ones."
By this time they had cleared the wood, and saw the 3 village lasses close at hand. Don Quixote looked all along the road to El Toboso, and as he could see nobody except the 3 peasant girls, he was completely puzzled, and asked Sancho if it was outside the city he had left them.
"How? Outside the city?" returned Sancho. "Are your worship's eyes in the back of your head, that you can't see that they are these who are coming here, shining like the very sun at noonday?"
"I see nothing, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "but 3 country girls on 3 jackasses."
"Now may God deliver me from the devil," said Sancho. "And can it be that your worship takes 3 hackneys, or whatever they're called, as white as the driven snow, for jackasses? By the Lord, I could tear my beard if that was the case."
"Well, I can only say, Sancho, my friend, that it is as plain they are jackasses, or jenny-asses, as that I am Don Quixote and thou Sancho Panza. At any rate, they seem to me to be so."
"Hush, senor," said Sancho, "don't talk that way, but open your eyes and come and pay your respects to the lady of your thoughts, who is close upon us now."
And with these words he advanced to receive the 3 village lasses, and dismounting from Dapple caught hold of one of the asses of the 3 country girls by the halter, and dropping on both knees on the ground he said,
"Queen and princess and duchess of beauty, may it please your haughtiness and greatness to receive into your favour and goodwill your captive knight, who stands there turned into marble stone and quite stupefied and benumbed at finding himself in your magnificent presence. I am Sancho Panza, his squire, and he, the vagabond knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, otherwise called the Knight of the Rueful Countenance."
Don Quixote had by this time placed himself on his knees beside Sancho, and with eyes starting out of his head and a puzzled gaze, was regarding her whom Sancho called queen and lady. And as he could see nothing in her except a village lass, and not a very well-favoured one, for she was platter-faced and snub-nosed, he was perplexed and bewildered, and did not venture to open his lips. The country girls, at the same time, were astonished to see these 2 men, so different in appearance, on their knees, preventing their companion from going on. She, however, who had been stopped, breaking silence, said angrily and testily,
"Get out of the way, bad luck to you, and let us pass, for we are in a hurry."
To which Sancho returned, "Oh, princess and universal lady of El Toboso, is not your magnanimous heart softened by seeing the pillar and prop of knight-errantry on his knees before your sublimated presence?" On hearing this, one of the others exclaimed, "Woe, then! Why, I'm rubbing thee down, she-ass of my father-in-law! See how the lordlings come to make game of the village girls now, as if we here could not chaff as well as themselves. Go your own way, and let us go ours, and it will be better for you."
"Get up, Sancho," said Don Quixote at this. "I see that fortune, with evil done to me unsated still, has taken possession of all the roads by which any comfort may reach this wretched soul that I carry in my flesh. And thou, highest perfection of excellence that can be desired, utmost limit of grace in human shape, sole relief of this afflicted heart that adores thee, though the malign enchanter that persecutes me has brought clouds and cataracts on my eyes, and them only, transformed thy unparagoned beauty, and changed thy features into those of a poor peasant girl, if so be he has not at the same time changed mine into those of some monster, to render them loathsome in thy sight, refuse not to look upon me with tenderness and love, seeing in this submission that I make on my knees to thy transformed beauty, the humility with which my soul adores thee."
"Heyday, my grandfather," cried the girl, "much I care for your love-making. Get out of the way and let us pass, and we'll thank you."
Sancho stood aside and let her go, very well pleased to have got so well out of the hobble he was in. The instant the village lass who had done duty for Dulcinea found herself free, prodding her cackney with a spike she had at the end of a stick, she set off at full speed across the field. The she-ass, however, feeling the point more acutely than usual, began cutting such capers that it flung the lady Dulcinea to the ground, seeing which Don Quixote ran to raise her up, and Sancho to fix and girth the pack-saddle, which also had slipped under the ass's belly. The pack-saddle being secured, as Don Quixote was about to lift up his enchanted mistress in his arms and put her upon her beast, the lady, getting up from the ground, saved him the trouble, for, going back a little, she took a short run, and putting both hands on the croup of the ass, she dropped into the saddle more lightly than a falcon, and sat astride like a man, whereat Sancho said, "Rogue, but our lady is lighter than a hawk, and might teach the cleverest Cordovan or Mexican how to mount. She cleared the back of the saddle in one jump, and without spurs she's making the hackney go like a zebra, and her damsels are no way behind her, for they all fly like the wind," which was the truth. For as soon as they saw Dulcinea mounted, they pushed on after her, and sped away without looking back for more than half a league. Don Quixote followed them with his eyes, and when they were no longer in sight he turned to Sancho and said, "How now, Sancho? Thou seest how I am hated by enchanters, and see to what a length the malice and spite they bear me go, when they seek to deprive me of the happiness it would give me to see my lady in her proper form. The fact is, I was born to be an example of misfortune, and the target and mark at which the arrows of adversity are aimed and directed. Observe, too, Sancho, that these traitors were not content with changing and transforming my Dulcinea, but they transformed and changed her into a shape as mean and ill-favoured as that of the village girl yonder. And at the same time they robbed her of that which is such a peculiar property of ladies of distinction, that is to say, that sweet fragrance that comes of being always among perfumes and flowers. For I must tell thee, Sancho, that when I approached to put Dulcinea upon her hackney, as thou sayest it was, though to me it appeared a she-ass, she gave me a whiff of raw garlic that made my head reel, and poisoned my very heart." "Oh, scum of the earth!" cried Sancho at this. "Oh, miserable, spiteful enchanters! Oh, that I could see you all strung by the gills like sardines on a twig! Ye know a great deal, ye can do a great deal, and ye do a great deal more. It ought to have been enough for you, ye scoundrels, to have changed the pearls of my lady's eyes into oak galls, and her hair of purest gold into the bristles of a red ox's tail, and, in short, all her features from fair to foul, without meddling with her smell. For by that we might somehow have found out what was hidden underneath that ugly rind. Though, to tell the truth, I never perceived her ugliness, but only her beauty, which was raised to the highest pitch of perfection by a mole she had on her right lip, like a moustache, with 7 or 8 red hairs, like threads of gold, and more than a palm long. From the correspondence which exists between those of the face and those of the body," said Don Quixote, "Dulcinea must have another mole resembling that on the thick of the thigh on that side on which she has the one on her face. But hairs of the length thou hast mentioned are very long for moles.
Well, all I can say is there they were as plain as could be, replied Sancho.
I believe it, my friend, returned Don Quixote. For nature bestowed nothing on Dulcinea that was not perfect and well finished, and so if she had 100 moles like the one thou hast described, in her they would not be moles, but moons and shining stars.
But tell me, Sancho, that which seemed to me to be a pack-saddle as thou wert fixing it, was it a flat saddle or a side-saddle?
It was neither, replied Sancho, but a jineta saddle, with a field covering worth half a kingdom, so rich is it.
And that I could not see all this, Sancho, said Don Quixote.
Once more I say, and will say 1,000 times, I am the most unfortunate of men.
Sancho, the rogue, had enough to do to hide his laughter at hearing the simplicity of the master he had so nicely befooled. At length, after a good deal more conversation had passed between them, they remounted their beasts and followed the road to Saragossa, which they expected to reach in time to take part in a certain grand festival, which is held every year in that illustrious city. But before they got there, things happened to them so many, so important, and so strange, that they deserve to be recorded and read, as will be seen farther on. Chapter 11 Of the strange adventure which the valiant Don Quixote had with the car or cart of the Cortes of Death. Dejected beyond measure did Don Quixote pursue his journey, turning over in his mind the cruel trick the enchanters had played him in changing his lady Dulcinea into the vile shape of the village lass. Nor could he think of any way of restoring her to her original form. And these reflections so absorbed him that, without being aware of it, he let go Rocinante's bridle, and he, perceiving the liberty that was granted him, stopped at every step to crop the fresh grass with which the plain abounded. Sancho recalled him from his reverie.
"Melancholy, senor," said he, "was made not for beasts, but for men. But if men give way to it overmuch, they turn to beasts. Control yourself, your worship. Be yourself again. Gather up Rocinante's reins. Cheer up. Rouse yourself, and show that gallant spirit that knights errant ought to have. What the devil is this? What weakness is this? Are we here or in France? The devil fly away with all the Dulcineas in the world, for the well-being of a single knight-errant is of more consequence than all the enchantments and transformations on earth."
"Hush, Sancho," said Don Quixote in a weak and faint voice. "Hush, and utter no blasphemies against that enchanted lady. For I alone am to blame for her misfortune and hard fate. Her calamity has come of the hatred the wicked bear me."
"So say I," returned Sancho. "His heart rend in twain, I trow, who saw her once to see her now."
"Thou mayest well say that, Sancho," replied Don Quixote, "as thou sawest her in the full perfection of her beauty. For the enchantment does not go so far as to pervert thy vision or hide her loveliness from thee. Against me alone and against my eyes is the strength of its venom directed. Nevertheless, there is one thing which has occurred to me, and that is that thou didst ill describe her beauty to me, for, as well as I recollect, thou saidst that her eyes were pearls. But eyes that are like pearls are rather the eyes of a sea-bream than of a lady, and I am persuaded that Dulcinea's must be green emeralds, full and soft, with two rainbows for eyebrows. Take away those pearls from her eyes, and transfer them to her teeth, for beyond a doubt, Sancho, thou hast taken the one for the other, the eyes for the teeth."
"Very likely," said Sancho, "for her beauty bewildered me as much as her ugliness did your worship. But let us leave it all to God, who alone knows what is to happen in this vale of tears, in this evil world of ours, where there is hardly a thing to be found without some mixture of wickedness, roguery, and rascality. But one thing, senor, troubles me more than all the rest, and that is thinking what is to be done when your worship conquers some giant, or some other knight, and orders him to go and present himself before the beauty of the lady Dulcinea. Where is this poor giant, or this poor wretch of a vanquished knight, to find her? I think I can see them wandering all over El Toboso, looking like noddies, and asking for my lady Dulcinea. And even if they meet her in the middle of the street, they won't know her any more than they would my father."
"Perhaps, Sancho," returned Don Quixote,
The enchantment does not go so far as to deprive conquered and presented giants and knights of the power of recognizing Dulcinea. We will try by experiment with one or two of the first I vanquish, and send them to her, whether they see her or not, by commanding them to return and give me account of what happened to them in this respect.
"I declare I think what your worship has proposed is excellent," said Sancho, "and that by this plan we shall find out what we want to know. And if it be that it is only from your worship she is hidden, the misfortune will be more yours than hers. But so long as the Lady Dulcinea is well and happy, we on our part will make the best of it and get on as well as we can, seeking our adventures and leaving time to take his own course, for he is the best physician for these and greater ailments."
Don Quixote was about to reply to Sancho Panza, but he was prevented by a cart crossing the road full of the most diverse and strange personages and figures that could be imagined. He who led the mules and acted as carter was a hideous demon. The cart was open to the sky without a cloth or cane roof, and the first figure that presented itself to Don Quixote's eyes was that of Death itself with a human face. Next to it was an angel with large painted wings, and at one side an emperor with a crown, to all appearance of gold, on his head. At the feet of Death was the god called Cupid, without his bandage, but with his bow, quiver, and arrows. There was also a knight in full armour, except that he had no morion nor helmet, but only a hat decked with plumes of divers colours. And along with these there were others with a variety of costumes and faces. All this, unexpectedly encountered, took Don Quixote somewhat aback, and struck terror into the heart of Sancho. But the next instant Don Quixote was glad of it, believing that some new perilous adventure was presenting itself to him, and under this impression, and with a spirit prepared to face any danger, he planted himself in front of the cart, and in a loud and menacing tone exclaimed,
"Carter, or coachman, or devil, or whatever thou art, tell me at once who thou art, whither thou art going, and who these folk are thou carriest in thy wagon, which looks more like Charon's boat than an ordinary cart."
To which the devil, stopping the cart, answered quietly, "Señor, we are players of Angelo El Malo's company. We have been acting the play of the Cortes of Death this morning, which is the octave of Corpus Christi, in a village behind that hill, and we have to act it this afternoon in that village which you can see from this. And as it is so near, and to save the trouble of undressing and dressing again, we go in the costumes in which we perform. That lad there appears as Death, that other as an angel, that woman, the manager's wife, plays the queen, this one the soldier, that the emperor, and I the devil. And I am one of the principal characters of the play, for in this company I take the leading parts. If you want to know anything more about us, ask me, and I will answer with the utmost exactitude, for as I am a devil, I am up to everything."
"By the faith of a knight-errant," replied Don Quixote, "when I saw this cart I fancied some great adventure was presenting itself to me. But I declare one must touch with the hand what appears to the eye if illusions are to be avoided. Godspeed you, good people. Keep your festival, and remember, if you demand of me aught wherein I can render you a service, I will do it gladly and willingly. For from a child I was fond of the play, and in my youth a keen lover of the actor's art."
While they were talking, fate so willed it that one of the company, in a mummer's dress, with a great number of bells, and armed with three blown ox-bladders at the end of a stick, joined them. And this merry Andrew, approaching Don Quixote, began flourishing his stick and banging on the ground with the bladders, and cutting capers with great jingling of the bells, which untoward apparition so startled Rocinante that, in spite of Don Quixote's efforts to hold him in, taking the bit between his teeth, he set off across the plain with greater speed than the bones of his anatomy ever gave any promise of. Sancho, who thought his master was in danger of being thrown, jumped off Dapple and ran in all haste to help him. But by the time he reached him he was already on the ground, and beside him was Rocinante, who had come down with his master, the usual end and upshot of Rocinante's vivacity and high spirits. But the moment Sancho quitted his beast to go and help Don Quixote, the dancing devil with the bladders jumped up on Dapple, and beating him with them more by the fright and the noise than by the pain of the blows, made him fly across the fields towards the village where they were going to hold their festival. Sancho witnessed Dapple's career and his master's fall, and did not know which of the two cases of need he should attend to first. But in the end, like a good squire and good servant, he let his love for his master prevail over his affection for his ass, though every time he saw the bladders rise in the air and come down on the hind quarters of his Dapple, he felt the pains and terrors of Death,
and he would have rather had the blows fall on the apples of his own eyes than the least hair of his ass's tail. In this trouble and perplexity he came to where Don Quixote lay in a far sorrier plight than he liked, and having helped him to mount Rocinante, he said to him,
"Señor, the devil has carried off my Dapple."
"What devil?" asked Don Quixote.
"The one with the bladders," said Sancho.
"Then I will recover him," said Don Quixote, "even if he be shut up with him in the deepest and darkest dungeons of hell. Follow me, Sancho, for the cart goes slowly, and with the mules of it I will make good the loss of Dapple."
"You need not take the trouble, señor," said Sancho. "Keep cool, for as I now see, the devil has let Dapple go, and he is coming back to his old quarters."
And so it turned out, for having come down with Dapple in imitation of Don Quixote and Rocinante, the devil made off on foot to the town, and the ass came back to his master.
"For all that," said Don Quixote, "it will be well to visit the discourtesy of that devil upon some of those in the cart, even if it were the emperor himself."
"Don't think of it, your worship," returned Sancho.
"Take my advice and never meddle with actors, for they are a favoured class. I myself have known an actor taken up for 2 murders and yet come off scot-free. Remember that as they are merry folk who give pleasure, everyone favours and protects them, and helps and makes much of them, above all when they are those of the royal companies and under patent, all or most of whom in dress and appearance look like princes."
"Still, for all that," said Don Quixote, "the player devil must not go off boasting, even if the whole human race favours him."
So saying, he made for the cart, which was now very near the town, shouting out as he went,
"Stay! Hold, ye merry jovial crew! I want to teach you how to treat asses and animals that serve the squires of knights-errant for steeds."
So loud were the shouts of Don Quixote that those in the cart heard and understood them, and guessing by the words what the speaker's intention was, Death in an instant jumped out of the cart, and the emperor, the devil Carter, and the angel after him, nor did the queen or the god Cupid stay behind, and all armed themselves with stones and formed in line, prepared to receive Don Quixote on the points of their pebbles. Don Quixote, when he saw them drawn up in such a gallant array with uplifted arms ready for a mighty discharge of stones, checked Rocinante, and began to consider in what way he could attack them with the least danger to himself. As he halted, Sancho came up, and seeing him disposed to attack this well-ordered squadron, said to him,
"It would be the height of madness to attempt such an enterprise. Remember, señor, that against beggars' bullets, and plenty of them, there is no defensive armour in the world except to stow oneself away under a brass bell. And besides, one should remember that it is rashness and not valour for a single man to attack an army that has death in it, and where emperors fight in person with angels, good and bad, to help them. And if this reflection will not make you keep quiet, perhaps it will to know for certain that among all these, though they look like kings, princes, and emperors, there is not a single knight-errant."
"Now, indeed, thou hast hit the point, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "which may and should turn me from the resolution I had already formed. I cannot and must not draw sword, as I have many a time before told thee, against anyone who is not a dubbed knight. It is for thee, Sancho, if thou wilt, to take vengeance for the wrong done to thy Dapple, and I will help thee from here by shouts and salutary counsels."
"There is no occasion to take vengeance on anyone, señor," replied Sancho, "for it is not the part of good Christians to revenge wrongs. And besides, I will arrange it with my ass to leave his grievance to my goodwill and pleasure, and that is to live in peace as long as heaven grants me life."
"Well," said Don Quixote, "if that be thy determination, good Sancho, sensible Sancho, Christian Sancho, honest Sancho, let us leave these phantoms alone, and turn to the pursuit of better and worthier adventures. For from what I see of this country, we cannot fail to find plenty of marvellous ones in it."
He at once wheeled about. Sancho ran to take possession of his Dapple. Death and his flying squadron returned to their cart and pursued their journey. And thus the dread adventure of the cart of death ended happily, thanks to the advice Sancho gave his master, who had, the following day, a fresh adventure of no less thrilling interest than the last, with an enamoured knight-errant. Chapter 12 Of the Strange Adventure Which Befell the Valiant Don Quixote with the Bold Knight of the Mirrors. The night succeeding the day of the encounter with death, Don Quixote and his squire passed under some tall, shady trees, and Don Quixote at Sancho's persuasion ate a little from the store carried by Dapple, and over their supper Sancho said to his master, "Señor, what a fool I should have looked if I had chosen for my reward the spoils of the first adventure your worship achieved, instead of the foals of the three mares. After all, a sparrow in the hand is better than a vulture on the wing."
"At the same time, Sancho," replied Don Quixote, "if thou hadst let me attack them as I wanted, at the very least the emperor's gold crown and Cupid's painted wings would have fallen to thee as spoils, for I should have taken them by force and given them into thy hands."
"The sceptres and crowns of those play-actor emperors," said Sancho, "were never yet pure gold, but only brass foil or tin."
"That is true," said Don Quixote, "for it would not be right that the accessories of the drama should be real, instead of being mere fictions and semblances like the drama itself. Towards which, Sancho, and, as a necessary consequence, towards those who represent and produce it, I would that thou wert favourably disposed, for they are all instruments of great good to the state, placing before us at every step a mirror in which we may see vividly displayed what goes on in human life. Nor is there any similitude that shows us more faithfully what we are and ought to be than the play and the players. Come, tell me. Hast thou not seen a play acted in which kings, emperors, pontiffs, knights, ladies, and divers other personages were introduced? One plays the villain, another the knave, this one the merchant, that the soldier, one the sharp-witted fool, another the foolish lover. And when the play is over, and they have put off the dresses they wore in it, all the actors become equal."
"Yes, I have seen that," said Sancho.
"Well then," said Don Quixote, "the same thing happens in the comedy and life of this world, where some play emperors, others popes, and, in short, all the characters that can be brought into a play. But when it is over, that is to say, when life ends, death strips them all of the garments that distinguish one from the other, and all are equal in the grave."
"A fine comparison," said Sancho, "though not so new, but that I have heard it many and many a time, as well as that other one of the game of chess, how, so long as the game lasts, each piece has its own particular office, and when the game is finished, they are all mixed, jumbled up and shaken together, and stowed away in the bag, which is much like ending life in the grave."
"Thou art growing less doltish and more shrewd every day, Sancho," said Don Quixote.
"Aye," said Sancho, "it must be that some of your worship's shrewdness sticks to me. Land that, of itself, is barren and dry, will come to yield good fruit if you dung it and till it. What I mean is that your worship's conversation has been the dung that has fallen on the barren soil of my dry wit, and the time I have been in your service and society has been the tillage. And with the help of this I hope to yield fruit in abundance that will not fall away or slide from those paths of good breeding that your worship has made in my parched understanding."
Don Quixote laughed at Sancho's affected phraseology, and perceived that what he said about his improvement was true, for now and then he spoke in a way that surprised him, though always, or mostly, when Sancho tried to talk fine and attempted polite language, he wound up by toppling over from the summit of his simplicity into the abyss of his ignorance, and where he showed his culture and his memory to the greatest advantage was in dragging in proverbs, no matter whether they had any bearing or not upon the subject in hand, as may have been seen already and will be noticed in the course of this history. In conversation of this kind they passed a good part of the night, but Sancho felt a desire to let down the curtains of his eyes, as he used to say when he wanted to go to sleep, and stripping Dapple, he left him at liberty to graze his fill. He did not remove Rocinante's saddle, as his master's express orders were that so long as they were in the field or not sleeping under a roof, Rocinante was not to be stripped, the ancient usage established and observed by knights errant being to take off the bridle and hang it onto the saddle-bow, but to remove the saddle from the horse, never. Sancho acted accordingly, and gave him the same liberty he had given Dapple, between whom and Rocinante there was a friendship so unequalled and so strong that it is handed down by tradition from father to son that the author of this veracious history devoted some special chapters to it, which, in order to preserve the propriety and decorum due to a history so heroic, he did not insert therein, although at times he forgets this resolution of his, and describes how eagerly the two beasts would scratch one another when they were together, and how, when they were tired or full, Rocinante would lay his neck across Dapple's, stretching half a yard or more on the other side, and the pair would stand thus, gazing thoughtfully on the ground for 3 days, or at least so long as they were left alone, or hunger did not drive them to go and look for food.
I may add that the author left it on record that he likened their friendship to that of Nisus and Euryalus, and Pylades and Orestes. And if that be so, it may be perceived, to the admiration of mankind, how firm the friendship must have been between these two peaceful animals, shaming men, who preserve friendships with one another so badly. That is why it was said, "For friend no longer is their friend. The reeds turn lances now." And someone else has sung, "Friend to friend, the bug steals in." And let no one fancy that the author was at all astray when he compared the friendship of these animals to that of men. For men have received many lessons from beasts, and learned many important things, as, for example, the enema from the stork, vomit and gratitude from the dog, watchfulness from the crane, foresight from the ant, modesty from the elephant, and loyalty from the horse. Sancho at last fell asleep at the foot of a cork tree, while Don Quixote dozed at that of a sturdy oak. But a short time only had elapsed when a noise he heard behind him awoke him, and rising up, startled, he listened and looked in the direction the noise came from, and perceived two men on horseback, one of whom, letting himself drop from the saddle, said to the other, "Dismount, my friend, and take the bridles off the horses, for, so far as I can see, this place will furnish grass for them, and the solitude and silence my lovesick thoughts need of." As he said this, he stretched himself upon the ground, and as he flung himself down, the armour in which he was clad rattled, whereby Don Quixote perceived that he must be a knight-errant. And going over to Sancho, who was asleep, he shook him by the arm, and, with no small difficulty, brought him back to his senses, and said in a low voice to him, "Brother Sancho, we have got an adventure."
"God send us a good one," said Sancho. "And where may her ladyship the adventure be?"
"Where, Sancho?" replied Don Quixote. "Turn thine eyes and look, and thou wilt see stretched there a knight-errant who, it strikes me, is not over and above happy, for I saw him fling himself off his horse and throw himself on the ground with a certain air of dejection, and his armour rattled as he fell."
"Well," said Sancho, "how does your worship make out that to be an adventure?"
I do not mean to say," returned Don Quixote, "that it is a complete adventure, but that it is the beginning of one, for it is in this way adventures begin. But listen, for it seems he is tuning a lute or guitar, and from the way he is spitting and clearing his chest, he must be getting ready to sing something."
"Faith, you are right," said Sancho, "and no doubt he is some enamoured knight."
"There is no knight-errant that is not," said Don Quixote. "But let us listen to him, for if he sings, by that thread we shall extract the ball of his thoughts, because out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh." Sancho was about to reply to his master, but the knight of the grove's voice, which was neither very bad nor very good, stopped him, and listening attentively the pair heard him sing this sonnet.
"Your pleasure, prithee, lady mine, unfold. Declare the terms that I am to obey. My will to yours submissively I mould, and from your law my feet shall never stray. Would you I die to silent grief a prey? Then count me even now as dead and cold. Would you I tell my woes in some new way? Then shall my tale by love itself be told. The unison of opposites to prove of the soft wax and diamond hard am I. But still, obedient to the laws of love, here, hard or soft, I offer you my breast. Whate'er you grave or stamp thereon shall rest indelible for all eternity." With an "Ah, me!"
that seemed to be drawn from the inmost recesses of his heart, the knight of the grove brought his lay to an end, and shortly afterwards exclaimed in a melancholy and piteous voice,
"O fairest and most ungrateful woman on earth, what? Can it be, most serene Casildea de Vandalia, that thou wilt suffer this thy captive knight to waste away and perish in ceaseless wanderings and rude and arduous toils? It is not enough that I have compelled all the knights of Navarre, all the Leonese, all the Tartesians, all the Castilians, and finally all the knights of La Mancha to confess thee the most beautiful in the world?"
"Not so," said Don Quixote at this. "For I am of La Mancha, and I have never confessed anything of the sort, nor could I, nor should I, confess a thing so much to the prejudice of my lady's beauty. Thou seest how this knight is raving, Sancho. But let us listen. Perhaps he will tell us more about himself."
"That he will," returned Sancho, "for he seems in a mood to bewail himself for a month at a stretch."
But this was not the case, for the knight of the grove, hearing voices near him, instead of continuing his lamentation, stood up and exclaimed in a distinct but courteous tone,
"Who goes there? What are you? Do you belong to the number of the happy or of the miserable?"
"Of the miserable," answered Don Quixote. "Then come to me," said he of the grove, "and rest assured that it is to woe itself and affliction itself you come."
Don Quixote, finding himself answered in such a soft and courteous manner, went over to him, and so did Sancho. The doleful knight took Don Quixote by the arm, saying,
"Sit down here, Sir Knight, for that you are one, and of those that profess knight-errantry, it is to me a sufficient proof to have found you in this place, where solitude and night, the natural couch and proper retreat of knights-errant, keep you company." To which Don made answer, "A knight I am of the profession you mention, and though sorrows, misfortunes, and calamities have made my heart their abode, the compassion I feel for the misfortunes of others has not been thereby banished from it. From what you have just now sung, I gather that yours spring from love, I mean from the love you bear that fair ingrate you named in your lament."
In the meantime they had seated themselves together on the hard ground peaceably and sociably, just as if, as soon as day broke, they were not going to break one another's heads.
"Are you, Sir Knight, in love, perchance?"
asked he of the grove of Don Quixote.
"By mischance I am," replied Don Quixote, "though the ills arising from well-bestowed affections should be esteemed favours rather than misfortunes."
"That is true," returned he of the grove. "If scorn did not unsettle our reason and understanding, for if it be excessive it looks like revenge."
"I was never scorned by my lady," said Don Quixote.
"Certainly not," said Sancho, who stood close by, "for my lady is as a lamb and softer than a roll of butter."
"Is this your squire?" asked he of the grove.
"He is," said Don Quixote.
"I never yet saw a squire," said he of the grove, "who ventured to speak when his master was speaking. At least, there is mine, who is as big as his father, and it cannot be proved that he has ever opened his lips when I am speaking." "By my faith, then," said Sancho, "I have spoken, and am fit to speak, in the presence of one as much, or even... But never mind, it only makes it worse to stir it."
The squire of the grove took Sancho by the arm, and saying to him,
"Let us two go where we can talk in squire style as much as we please, and leave these gentlemen our masters to fight it out over the story of their loves. And depend upon it, daybreak will find them at it without having made an end of it."
"So be it by all means," said Sancho, "and I will tell your worship who I am, that you may see whether I am to be reckoned among the number of the most talkative squires."
With this the two squires withdrew to one side, and between them there passed a conversation as droll as that which passed between their masters was serious. Chapter 13. In which is continued the adventure of the Knight of the Grove, together with the sensible, original, and tranquil colloquy that passed between the two squires. The knights and the squires made two parties, these telling the story of their lives, the others the story of their loves. But the history relates first of all the conversation of the servants, and afterwards takes up that of the masters. And it says that, withdrawing a little from the others, he of the grove said to Sancho,
"A hard life it is we lead and live, senor, we that are squires to knights-errant. Verily, we eat our bread in the sweat of our faces, which is one of the curses God laid on our first parents."
"It may be said, too," added Sancho, "that we eat it in the chill of our bodies, for who gets more heat and cold than the miserable squires of knight-errantry? Even so, it would not be so bad if we had something to eat, for woes are lighter if there's bread. But sometimes we go a day or two without breaking our fast, except with the wind that blows."
"All that," said he of the grove, "may be endured and put up with when we have hopes of reward. For unless the knight-errant he serves is excessively unlucky, after a few turns the squire will at least find himself rewarded with a fine government of some island or some fair county."
"I," said Sancho, "have already told my master that I shall be content with the government of some island, and he is so noble and generous that he has promised it to me ever so many times."
"I," said he of the grove, "shall be satisfied with a canonry for my services, and my master has already assigned me one.
Your master, said Sancho, no doubt is a knight in the church line, and can bestow rewards of that sort on his good squire. But mine is only a layman, though I remember some clever but, to my mind, designing people strove to persuade him to try and become an archbishop. He, however, would not be anything but an emperor. But I was trembling all the time lest he should take a fancy to go into the church, not finding myself fit to hold office in it, for I may tell you, though I seem a man, I am no better than a beast for the church.
"Well, then, you're wrong there," said he of the Grove, "for those island governments are not all satisfactory. Some are awkward, some are poor, some are dull, and, in short, the highest and choicest brings with it a heavy burden of cares and troubles which the unhappy wight to whose lot it has fallen bears upon his shoulders. Far better would it be for us who have adopted this accursed service to go back to our own houses, and there to employ ourselves in pleasanter occupations, in hunting or fishing, for instance. For what squire in the world is there so poor as not to have a hack and a couple of greyhounds and a fishing rod to amuse himself with in his own village?"
"I am not in want of any of those things," said Sancho. "To be sure I have no hack, but I have an ass that is worth my master's horse twice over. God send me a bad Easter and that the next one I am to see if I would swap, even if I got 4 bushels of barley to boot. Oh, you will laugh at the value I put on my Dapple, for Dapple is the colour of my beast. As to greyhounds, I can't want for them, for there are enough and to spare in my town. And, moreover, there is more pleasure in sport when it is at other people's expense."
"In truth and earnest, Sir Squire," said he of the Grove, "I have made up my mind and determined to have done with these drunken vagaries of these knights, and go back to my village and bring up my children, for I have 3 like 3 oriental pearls."
"I have 2, said Sancho, "that might be presented before the Pope himself, especially a girl whom I am breeding up for a countess, please God, though in spite of her mother."
"And how old is this lady that is being bred up for a countess?" asked he of the Grove.
15, a couple of years more or less," answered Sancho. "But she is as tall as a lance, and as fresh as an April morning, and as strong as a porter."
"Those are gifts to fit her not to be only a countess, but a nymph of the greenwood," said he of the Grove. "Horse and strumpet! What muscles the rogue must have!"
To which Sancho made answer somewhat sulkily, "She's no strumpet, nor was her mother, nor will either of them be, please God, while I live. Speak more civilly. For one bred up among knights errant, who are courtesy itself, your words don't seem to me to be very becoming."
"Oh, how little you know about compliments, Sir Squire," returned he of the Grove. "What? Don't you know that when a horseman delivers a good lance thrust at the bull in the plaza, or when anyone does anything very well, the people are wont to say, 'Ha! Horse and rip! How well he has done it!' and that what seems to be abuse in the expression is high praise? Disown sons and daughters, senor, who don't do what deserves that compliments of this sort should be paid to their parents."
"I do disown them," replied Sancho. "And in this way, and by the same reasoning, you might call me and my children and my wife all the strumpets in the world, for all they do and say is of a kind that in the highest degree deserves the same praise. And to see them again, I pray God to deliver me from mortal sin, or, what comes to the same thing, to deliver me from this perilous calling of squire, into which I have fallen a second time, decayed and beguiled by a purse with 100 ducats that I found one day in the heart of the Sierra Morena. And the devil is always putting a bag full of doubloons before my eyes, here, there, everywhere, until I fancy at every stop I'm putting my hand on it, and hugging it and carrying it home with me, and making investments and getting interest and living like a prince. And so long as I think of this, I make light of all the hardships I endure with this simpleton of a master of mine, who I well know is more of a madman than a knight."
"There's why they say that covetousness busts the bag," said he of the Grove. "But if you come to talk of that sort, there is not a greater one in the world than my master, for he is one of those of whom they say the cares of others kill the ass. For in order that another knight may recover the senses he has lost, he makes a madman of himself and goes looking for what, when found, may, for all I know, fly in his own face."
"And is he in love, perchance?" asked Sancho.
"He is," said he of the Grove, "with one Casildea de Vandalia, the rawest and best-roasted lady the whole world could produce. But that rawness is not the only foot he limps on, for he has greater schemes rumbling in his bowels, as will be seen before many hours are over."
"There's no road so smooth, but it has some hole or hindrance in it," said Sancho. "In other houses they cook beans, but in mine it's by the potful. Madness will have more followers and hangers-on than sound sense. But if there be any truth in the common saying that to have companions in trouble gives some relief, I may take consolation from you, inasmuch as you serve a master as crazy as my own."
"Crazy but valiant," replied he of the Grove, "and more roguish than crazy or valiant."
"Mine is not that," said Sancho. "I mean, he has nothing of the rogue in him. On the contrary, he has the soul of an old pitcher. He has no thought of doing harm to anyone, only good to all. Nor has he any malice whatever in him. A child might persuade him that it is night at noonday. And for this simplicity, I love him as the core of my heart. And I can't bring myself to leave him, let him do ever such foolish things."
"For all that, brother and senor," said he of the Grove, "if the blind lead the blind, both are in danger of falling into the pit. It is better for us to beat a quiet retreat and get back to our own quarters, for those who seek adventures don't always find good ones."
Sancho kept spitting from time to time, and his spittle seemed somewhat ropey and dry. Observing which, the compassionate squire of the Grove said,
"Yeah, it seems to me that with all this talk of ours, our tongues are sticking to the roofs of our mouths. But I have a pretty good loosener hanging from the saddle-bow of my horse."
And getting up, he came back the next minute with a large skin of wine and a pasty half a yard across. And this is no exaggeration, for it was made of a house-rabbit so big that Sancho, as he handled it, took it to be made of goat, not to say a kid. And looking at it, he said,
"And do you carry this with you, senor?"
"Why, what are you talking about?" said the other. "Do you take me for some poultry squire? I carry a better larder on my horse's croup than a general takes with him when he goes on a march."
Sancho ate without requiring to be pressed, and in the dark bolted mouthfuls like the knots on a tether, and said he,
"You are a proper trusty squire. Oh, one of the right sort, sumptuous and grand as this banquet shows, which, if it has not come here by magic art, at any rate has the look of it. Not like me, unlucky beggar, that have nothing more in my saddlebags than a scrap of cheese so hard that one might brain a giant with it, and to keep it company a few dozen carobs and as many more filberts and walnuts. Thanks to the austerity of my master and the idea he has and the rule he follows that knight-errants must not live or sustain themselves on anything except dried fruits and the herbs of the field."
"By my faith, brother," said he of the Grove, "my stomach is not made for thistles or wild pears or roots of the woods. Let our masters do as they like with their chivalry notions and laws, and eat what those enjoin. I carry my grub and this wineskin hanging to the saddle-bow, whatever they may say. And it is such an object of worship with me, and I love it so, that there is hardly a moment but I am kissing and embracing it over and over again."
And so saying, he thrust it into Sancho's hands, who, raising it aloft, pointed it to his mouth, gazed at the stars for a quarter of an hour, and when he had done drinking, let his head fall on one side, and giving a deep sigh, exclaimed,
"Ah, whoreson and rogue, how Catholic it is!"
"There, you see," said he of the Grove, hearing Sancho's exclamation, "you have called this wine whoreson by way of praise?"
"Well," said Sancho, "I own it, and I grant it is no dishonour to call anyone whoreson when it is to be understood as praise.
But tell me, senor, by what you love best, is this Ciudad Real wine?"
"Oh, rare wine taster," said he of the Grove. "Nowhere else, indeed, does it come from, and it has some years' age, too."
"Leave me alone for that," said Sancho. "Never fear, but I'll hit upon the place it came from somehow. What would you say, Sir Squire, to my having such a great natural instinct in judging wines that you have only to let me smell one, and I can tell positively its country, its kind, its flavour and soundness, the changes it will undergo, and everything that appertains to a wine? But it is no wonder, for I have had in my family on my father's side the two best wine tasters that have been known in La Mancha for many a long year. And to prove it, I'll tell you now a thing that happened them. They gave the two of them some wine out of a cask to try, asking their opinion as to the condition, quality, goodness, or badness of the wine. One of them tried it with the tip of his tongue. The other did no more than bring it to his nose. The first said the wine had a flavour of iron. The second said it had a stronger flavour of cordovan hide. The owner said the cask was clean and that nothing had been added to the wine from which it could have got a flavour of either iron or leather. Nevertheless, these two great wine tasters held to what they had said. Time went by, the wine was sold, and when they came to clean out the cask, they found in it a small key hanging to a thong of leather. See now if one who comes of the same stock has not a right to give his opinion in such like cases.
Therefore, I see, said he of the grove. Let us give up going in quest of adventures, and as we have loaves, let us not go looking for cakes, but return to our cribs, for God will find us there if it be his will.
"'Until my master reaches Saragossa,' said Sancho, "'I'll remain in his service. "'After that, we'll see.'
The end of it was that the two squires talked so much and drank so much that sleep had to tie their tongues and moderate their thirst, for to quench it was impossible. And so the pair of them fell asleep clinging to the now nearly empty wineskin and with half-chewed morsels in their mouths. And there we will leave them for the present, to relate what passed between the knight of the grove and him of the rueful countenance. Chapter 14. Wherein is continued the adventure of the knight of the grove. Among the things that passed between Don Quixote and the knight of the wood or grove, the history tells us he of the grove said to Don Quixote, "In fine, Sir Knight, I would have you know that my destiny, or more properly speaking, my choice, led me to fall in love with the peerless Casildea de Vandalia. I call her peerless because she has no peer, whether it be in bodily stature or in the supremacy of rank and beauty. This same Casildea, then, that I speak of, requited my honourable passion and gentle aspirations by compelling me, as his stepmother did Hercules, to engage in many perils of various sorts, at the end of each promising me that, with the end of the next, the object of my hopes should be attained. But my labours have gone on increasing link by link until they are past counting, nor do I know what will be the last one that is to be the beginning of the accomplishment of my chaste desires. On one occasion she bade me go and challenge the famous giantess of Seville, La Giralda by name, who is as mighty and strong as if made of brass, and though never stirring from one spot, is the most restless and changeable woman in the world. I came, I saw, I conquered, and I made her stay quiet and behave herself, for nothing but north winds blew for more than a week. Another time I was ordered to lift those ancient stones, the mighty bulls of Gizando, an enterprise that might more fitly be entrusted to porters than to knights. Again she bade me fling myself into the cavern of Cabra, an unparalleled and awful peril, and bring her a minute account of all that is concealed in those gloomy depths. Bah! I stopped the motion of the Giralda, I lifted the bulls of Gizando, I flung myself into the cavern and brought to light the secrets of its abyss, and my hopes are as dead can be, and her scorn and her commands as lively as ever. To be brief, last of all she has commanded me to go through all the provinces of Spain, and compel all the knights errant wandering therein to confess that she surpasses all women alive today in beauty, and that I am the most valiant and the most deeply enamoured knight on earth, in support of which claim I have already travelled over the greater part of Spain, and have there vanquished several knights who have dared to contradict me. But what I most plume and pride myself upon is having vanquished in single combat that so famous knight Don Quixote of La Mancha, and made him confess that my Casildea is more beautiful than his Dulcinea. And in this one victory I hold myself to have conquered all the knights in the world. For this Don Quixote that I speak of has vanquished them all, and I, having vanquished him, his glory, his fame, and his honour have passed and are transferred to my person, for the more the vanquished hath of fair renown, the greater glory gilds the victor's crown. Thus the innumerable achievements of the said Don Quixote are now set down to my account, and have become mine. Don Quixote was amazed when he heard the Knight of the Grove, and was a thousand times on the point of telling him he lied, and had the lie direct already on the tip of his tongue. But he restrained himself as well as he could, in order to force him to confess the lie with his own lips. So he said to him quietly, "As to what you say, Sir Knight, about having vanquished most of the knights of Spain, or even of the whole world, I say nothing. But that you have vanquished Don Quixote of La Mancha I consider doubtful. It may have been some other that resembled him, although there are few like him.
"How? Not vanquished?" said he of the Grove. "By the heaven that is above us, I fought Don Quixote and overcame him and made him yield. And he is a man of tall stature, gaunt features, long, lank limbs, with hair turning grey, an aquiline nose rather hooked, and large black drooping moustaches. And he does battle under the name of, the Countenance, and he has for squire a peasant called Sancho Panza. He presses the loins and rules the reins of a famous steed called Rocinante, and lastly he has for the mistress of all his will a certain Dulcinea del Toboso, once upon a time called Aldonzo Lorenzo, just as I call mine Casildea de Vandalia, because her name is Casilda, and she is of Andalusia. If all these tokens are not enough to vindicate the truth of what I say, here is my sword that will compel incredulity itself to give credence to it."
"Calm yourself, Sir Knight," said Don Quixote, "and give ear to what I am about to say to you. I would have you know that this Don Quixote you speak of is the greatest friend I have in the world, so much so that I may say I regard him in the same light as my own person. And from the precise and clear indications you have given, I cannot but think that he must be the very one you have vanquished. On the other hand, I see with my eyes and feel with my hands that it is impossible it can have been the same, unless it be that, as he has many enemies who are enchanters, and one in particular who is always persecuting him, some one of these may have taken his shape in order to allow himself to be vanquished, so as to defraud him of the fame that his exalted achievements as a knight have earned and acquired for him throughout the known world. And in confirmation of this I must tell you, too, that it is but 10 hours since these said enchanters, his enemies, transformed the shape and person of the fair Dulcinea del Toboso into a foul and mean village lass, and in the same way they must have transformed Don Quixote. And if all this does not suffice to convince you of the truth of what I say, here is Don Quixote himself, who will maintain it by arms, on foot, or on horseback, or in any way you please." And so saying, he stood up and laid his hand upon his sword, waiting to see what the Knight of the Grove would do, who, in an equally calm voice, said in reply, "Pledges don't distress a good payer. He who has succeeded in vanquishing you once when transformed, Sir Don Quixote, may fairly hope to subdue you in your own proper shape. But, as it is not becoming for knights to perform their feats of arms in the dark, like highwaymen and bullies, let us wait till daylight, that the sun may behold our deeds, and the conditions of our combat shall be that the vanquished shall be at the victor's disposal, to do all that he may enjoin, provided the injunction be such as shall be becoming a knight."
"I am more than satisfied with these conditions and terms," replied Don Quixote.
And so saying, they betook themselves to where their squires lay, and found them snoring and in the same posture they were in when sleep fell upon them. They roused them up, and bade them get the horses ready, as at sunrise they were to engage in a bloody and arduous single combat. At which intelligence Sancho was aghast and thunderstruck, trembling for the safety of his master, because of the mighty deeds he had heard the squire of the Grove ascribe to his. But without a word the two squires went in quest of their cattle, for by this time the three horses and the ass had smelt one another out, and were all together. On the way he of the Grove said to Sancho,
"You must know, brother, that it is the custom with the fighting men of Andalusia, when they are godfathers in any quarrel, not to stand idle with folded arms while their godsons fight. I say so to remind you that while our masters are fighting, we too have to fight and knock one another to shivers."
"That custom, Sir Squire," replied Sancho, "may hold good among those bullies and fighting men you talk of, but certainly not among the squires of knights-errant. At least, I have never heard my master speak of any custom of the sort, and he knows all the laws of knight-errantry by heart. But, granting it true that there is an express law that squires are to fight while their masters are fighting, I don't mean to obey it, but to pay the penalty that may be laid on peacefully-minded squires like myself, for I am sure it cannot be more than 2 pounds of wax, and I would rather pay that, for I know it will cost me less than the lint I shall be at the expense of to mend my head, which I look upon as broken and split already. There's another thing that makes it impossible for me to fight, that I have no sword, for I never carried one in my life."
"I know a good remedy for that," said he of the Grove. "I have here 2 linen bags of the same size. You shall take one, and I the other, and we will fight at bag blows with equal arms."
"'If that's the way, so be it with all my heart,' said Sancho. "'For that sort of battle will serve to knock the dust out of us instead of hurting us.'
"'That will not do,' said the other. "'For we must put into the bags to keep the wind from blowing them away "'half a dozen nice smooth stones, all of the same weight, "'and in this way we shall be able to baste one another "'without doing ourselves any harm or mischief.'
"'Body of my father!'